on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
All right, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to be with us on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn. We have City Hall, first of all, today. A little bit later on the program, we're going to be talking about dog flu. Did you know there was such a thing? Actually, it's pretty serious. Canine influenza. And one of the worst times of the year for it is during the holiday season. We'll talk with the veterinarian, pretty famous vet, Dr. Courtney Campbell. He's not in Butler, and we'll be talking with him on the telephone from out in California. You may have seen him. He's a frequent guest on Rachel Ray, and he's a frequent guest on Live with Kelly and Ryan. He'll be on with us a little bit later to give us a few tips on that. Canine influenza, dog flu. Also on the program today, we'll be talking about brain health with a physician, a medical doctor, who is a consultant on that Will Smith movie of a couple of years ago, Concussion, about brain damage that football players have suffered. So all that to come later on the program today. But first of all, it's our regular edition of City Hall, which we do, try to do it every month, right after there's a meeting of Butler City Council. Council met last night. One of the members of council, Corey Roche, is with us here today. Councilman, good to see you again. Nice to have you.
Thanks. Nice to be here, Dave.
Also with us is the parking manager for the city of Butler, Jimmy Ciprian. Jimmy, always good to see you as well.
Oh, always glad to be here, Dave.
Now, the first thing I have to ask you is, on a morning like this, after an ice storm followed by a heavy, wet snowstorm of several inches, Are the city parking lots cleared and ready to go?
Our city parking lots are 100% cleared. Our staff with the street department, the parks department, everybody was spreading salt. And, of course, we have the Center City Garage there, the diamond of our parking system, and just pull in. No snow, no ice. And, of course, the tier holds 451 cars, so that's always available for anybody who wants to come downtown and not worry about snow and ice.
Now, we have a tremendous, literally tens of thousands of people without electricity in Butler County here today. West Penn Power, the numbers are astonishing. Over 40,000 customers, more than a third of West Penn Power customers in Butler County are without power. Does that in any way affect the parking authority garages or the kiosks?
It
or
would,
like
but
that?
We were very lucky this morning. We have complete power in all our facilities right now. So good. Yeah, I called the Marriott at about 8 o'clock this morning. I said, "Is everything still open?" Oh yeah, we had power all night. So looking good.
Parts of the city were affected. Parts were not.
Yeah, although, the 200 block is a very important block to the city. And
the heart of the downtown.
It's the heart led by, 125-year destination.
Councilman Corey Roche, you live in the city of Butler. Were you affected by the massive power outage?
Luckily, I was not. We just had a few branches fall down outside, but we kept our power and heating and everything on all night, so we're very lucky.
I don't have to tell you how lucky you were.
Yes.
Because there are huge parts of the city that are without power here today. Well, Butler City Council met last night. It was what they call regular public session. You actually had a meeting earlier this week, too, for agenda-setting purposes, where you try to take care of some of the stuff that might have prolonged discussion or something like that. Make sure everybody's up to speed before you have to vote on it on Thursday night, right?
Yeah, more of the business is hashed out at the agenda-setting meeting. So those can be quite lengthy, then it tends to speed up the voting session, the voting meeting, which is what we have on Thursday.
By the way, almost all municipalities now do that, whether it's school boards or county commissioners. I know one of the first to do it was in Allegheny County because they have massive amounts of business that comes before them. They would never be able to get through a regular meeting if they didn't have agenda setting and, take care of the small stuff first. So last night, a preliminary vote on the budget for the city of Butler in the coming new year of 2019, Councilman, and for city taxpayers, looks pretty good, right?
Yes, no tax increases this year on real estate or the lighting tax that we've had in the past few years.
Mm-hmm. Is the city able to balance the budget? Because it's a pretty hefty budget. It's up to like $9 million, I think, now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's $9.1 million. We are able to balance it right now, but this is with a increase on the parking fee. So we'll probably have to increase the parking permits, and that's in the lots, not at the meters or anything like that. So, but that is yet to be determined. That would come after.
So that would be a separate vote. That won't be
correct because that would be tied in more with the city fee schedule, with like the price of permits, things like that.
I can remember for a number of years, the budget in the city of Butler ran about $7 million. Now all of a sudden it's over just over $9 million. So expenses grow, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, and the challenge is to keep revenues up with expenses. Now this was a preliminary vote last night. There'll still be a final vote?
That's correct. It has to be voted on, and then it's open for a month, so the public can actually go to the city building, look over the budget, and then it would be voted on at the December meeting before it would then take effect in January.
Could there be some minor changes made before the final vote?
Yeah, because some of these expenses and revenues are estimated, so that could get, you know, fine-tuned a little bit more before December.
Let me talk with Mr. Chiprian here about the parking permit. Some people may not realize that you have such a thing in the city.
These are generally for
people who work in the city, right?
Yeah, I think we sell over 800 parking permits for commuters. And there would be a small increase. This is the smallest increase we've ever had of $5. The last time we did it was 4 years ago. And I believe the last time we did it before that was almost 17 years ago. So we do not raise, you know, we try to keep a well-maintained, clean, convenient system, but it does need maintenance. There's a lot of new technology involved with this, and just putting our lots up to ADA compliant is a major task because every corner has to be properly measured and done right.
While we're talking about that, that caused a delay in the reopening of the lot on Center Avenue, right?
It did.
Yeah,
yeah, I was so surprised how many calls I got. I can't get into the parking lot. And
we had calls here on the program from people saying, well, the parking lot's been repaved. How come it's blocked off?
It was the ADA compliant issue.
ADA stands for Americans with Disabilities Act.
Yes.
And that was approved by the federal government. Oh, gosh, it's 10, 15
years
ago.
You know, I think
I was
listening to that show that day. I think I called down and I said, hey, Dave, it's an ADA.
That's right, because I had no idea why it wasn't
Yeah, they
reopened.
Held that up, didn't they, for about
you needed,
two,
what,
three,
railings or something?
A railing had to be installed. We needed a final measurement on the way the curb was designed. It was quite involved.
Yeah. Among the other things required by the Americans with Disabilities Act, anytime you repave a street, or in this case a public parking lot, where it comes to an intersection, you need those bubble things to let people...
There's a real name for it. I called it a honeycomb, but well, Sean Evans isn't going to be happy with that word there.
Well, that's better than my description, but it's the metal plates to let people who are, you know, have visual impairment, they can feel that with their feet. They know they're coming to a street, you know. But that's mandatory. That has to go
it
in
is.
Now before you can
it
repave
is.
A street or a parking lot. So anyway, I didn't mean to get off offline from the parking permits. Are they all the same price, or does it vary
anywhere from $25 up to $60. And there would be a... If council and mayor approved it, it would be a $5 increase in the permit fees. You know, roughly at the top market, you know, just about $2 and change per day. It's that's the going rate. Of course, you know, we're not Pittsburgh, but we're not the littlest city in the world. We have a first-class parking system for a third-class city, which is very amazing, with over 1,941 parking spaces in the city.
Well put. I like that first-class parking for a third-class
city. Yeah, playing with the big boys now, Dave, you know.
So people who get a parking permit, they pay monthly? Is that
they
how
do.
That works?
You pay monthly, yearly. Some people buy 6 months at a time. And you just go down to the police station there. Sharon's down there to nicely greet you and say, you know, which ones do you want? What lot do you want? And some lots are sold out.
I'm just going to ask you that. Are they available? Are there parking spaces?
Yeah, I mean, some of the key lots are sold out. The Diamond McCain Street deck is pretty much always sold out. And Diamond Lot, that is definitely the diamond of the parking system, mm-hmm. with, you know, with revenues. That is really heavily used.
Right across the Diamond Park from the courthouse. So.
Yeah. And, of course, that tier fills up. We sell, you know, over 180 permits for the tier garage. So we keep capacity.
Are there permits for the new one, the brand new one? On
Yes, there's some available.
Yeah?
Yeah, but we're trying to keep them down to around 150 because we have to provide parking for the Marriott, which has been working out very well because the Marriott people are coming in when the commuters are leaving, so they're getting the front spaces, and then in the morning the commuters are bopping in and taking those spaces, keeping it rotating.
Now, despite this attractive permit policy, that still leaves plenty of open parking places for people that are coming into downtown to shop or whatever.
The quarter meter's there, and there is no rate increase on the quarter meter. Just put your quarter in, you know, it's just, that's a... Maybe put an extra quarter in. It's amazing how fast, you know, an hour goes. But, you know, 50 cents an hour, we're pretty reasonable there.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to change those because it would cost a fortune to change over the old Dunkin' meters.
Compare that to, as you said, Jimmy, compare that to what you pay to park in Pittsburgh.
50 cents for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And nobody has enough quarters, so they're forcing you to use your credit card or a debit card.
Exactly.
And they want that because it's all nicely done, you know, neatly done with the revenues. Goes right into their account.
And be prepared for a sticker shock.
But Butler has, you know, Butler has kiosks now, too. So if you want to use your credit card, that's for your convenience. Please use it. Our enforcement team has iPads, iPhones. We're on the cutting edge.
It's our regular edition of City Hall. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program today. I want to talk about a few other things that happened at Butler City Council meeting last night. Councilman Corey Roche is with us. Council decided that they would take no action at this particular time on a proposal that would call for supporting an amendment to the U.S. Constitution, right, Councilman?
Yes, and it has to do with corporate personhood and do with campaign contributions and things like that. And that was brought up at the agenda-setting meeting on Tuesday, and some people had some concerns over some of the wording and the long-term ramifications with the city. So everyone felt it was best to postpone it, and Dane Winkler, who actually brought the resolution, provided a new resolution for us at the end of the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're all going to look over that and probably take action in the future.
Dane was with us earlier this week on the program to explain it because I was not familiar with the group prior to the introduction of this resolution. And this, by the way, it wasn't binding or anything. It was a resolution indicating that the city of Butler would support campaign finance.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. So, okay, it may come back on the agenda, it may not, but it wasn't voted upon last night.
That's correct.
Here's something that maybe we should have made this the first story. If you're thinking about renting a shelter for the coming spring and summer down at Butler Memorial Park, City Treasurer John Grency says the first day you can put in a shelter reservation is November 19th. That's this coming Monday, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And they do go fast. People book them for the summer for their family reunions,
absolutely,
graduation party.
People like to know that first date they're available, and sometimes they're standing in line. What do you do that at the city building? Is that what you?
At the treasurer's office, yes.
Treasurer's office, right inside the door of the city building. By the way, are the front steps done? Or can you get in the city building that way yet? Do you know?
Almost. They're still closed off, but they're getting close. They look great.
You can go up the side.
You can still go up to the ramp to the right.
Yeah, you can sit. Don't think you can't get in the building. It's just those steps that lead, the front steps leading up to the front door. You can go in the side ramp.
Yes.
Yeah. Same door. It just you get up on the porch a different direction. Work that needed to be done, by the way.
Yes.
And also some pointing work on the masonry on the city building.
Yes. The first phase of that has been complete for this year, too. We actually had some new air conditioning units installed in the city building. So those were the three big projects for the city building.
pointing, getting that done before the winter weather sets in would have been important, because that can lead to a disaster if you don't get that taken care of when it needs it.
Yeah, it desperately needed the work, so it's a welcome project that we glad
to. Well, you know, trying to think back, Councilman, on, and I'm sure it was way before your time, too, when the city decided to totally renovate that building as to, you know, to serve as City Hall,
mm-hmm.
Because it was the former Troutman Mansion.
Yes.
It became the city building, and I would guess 20 years ago, anyway. Do you remember that, Jimmy?
Yeah. My dad tells the stories how his band used to play up on the third floor where we have chambers.
Yeah.
And that was the music wing, or I think the architect wasn't Lee Ligo, maybe? I think he did a lot of the architectural design on that.
I can remember when that top floor was just one big room.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't realize.
Oh, you're not dating yourself, are you, Dave?
Yeah, that's where council met. It's just that we didn't have nice chambers like
nice
you
chambers
do now.
Nice chambers like you do now.
Yeah. But I didn't realize that that was like the music area for the Troutman Mansion.
Yeah,
that makes
sense. That was where the big parties were up there on the third floor.
Yeah. Well, it's a beautiful building. I'll tell you when it was, and I still can't put a year on it, but it was when the construction of the new public safety building was up for grabs, and the county government center. You know, when the county decided to build a new county government center they had the problems with the Lafayette building, because there were some people that wanted to make it a city county building like they have in Pittsburgh, where Allegheny County offices and the city of Pittsburgh offices are in the same building. And that was tossed around for quite a while, and then the city finally decided no, they were going to go stay separate, and they weren't going to put the fire trucks in there, and then they were going to renovate the city building. So that's when it happened. So it was time for some exterior work, I guess, is what I'm getting to.
It was due for that.
Yeah. I was involved, you know, whenever we transferred where the parking lot is now,
mm-hmm.
beside there, and we transferred with the city to build the parking lot, and we tore down the fire station, and they moved the, what do they call that building over there?
Public safety building?
Yeah, the public safety building.
I forgot about that.
Remember that?
Where the public safety building is now, that was a parking lot.
That was the parking lot, so the parking authority bought the other lot, and we switched them, and the rest is history.
I forgot all about that, yeah.
And then I just bought back a property back behind the city building. There's another parking lot behind that lot now, so we have, I think it was like, we have like 35 parking spaces there that are ultimately used every day.
Is that further towards the north?
Like behind the Burger Hut, like down towards there, across from the Armory.
Had that been a private lot before?
It was a private lot.
So will you be putting meters in there?
No meters. We've had this now for about 3 years. It's paved, and it's monitored with permits.
I see. Okay. Well, always need more space, right? Want to make sure people have a place to park.
I like to buy land.
I can remember when I was a kid, our family home was not in Butler. It was about 30 miles away, but we came to Butler to shop probably every other Saturday.
Saturday was the big day.
At least twice a month, and more often than that, Christmas
Saturday
time.
Evening.
Yeah, yeah.
That was like the time to shop.
But there was not nearly the parking available downtown then that there is now.
We had some very smart businessmen back in the day that says, if we're going to survive, we're going to need parking. And, of course, that was led by my grandfather, John Ciprian, and a group of guys got together, bought a couple of lots, and the rest just kept building and building till they built the big tier garage, now the deck, then the Center City project, so that you got to have convenient parking, because you see what happens to these other cities like Newcastle or New Kent that they don't have the appropriate parking, and convenient and economical.
Yes, if you drive through downtown Newcastle these days, it's a ghost town. It really is. I mean, all the villages.
Well, they took parking off the street. It literally killed the town. Literally. I mean, it's pretty nice now to pull right up in front of a store, do your business, eat your lunch, go down to Tilly's, have a dinner. Some of these other, we got two micro brews now. We got a pasta shop on the corner. you know, we're really trying to expand that evening type of
and for parties. For a quarter or two quarters, as you said, pretty good deal.
Two quarters.
And yes. The parking on Main Street's actually free for 2 hours.
2 hours.
That's right. On Main Street it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and people utilize it to the max. I mean, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. And our girls are very good at that. Occasionally somebody will get a fine for parking there.
Well, I can remember as a kid coming to Butler for a family shopping excursion, you know, during the holiday season, and Dad driving around. Drive around one block,
days.
Drive around another block.
Couldn't get a parking space.
Waiting for a spot to open up because it was so crowded. It's City Hall. We're talking with the parking manager of the City of Butler. Jimmy Chiprian is here, also one of the members of Butler City Council, and that's Corey Roche with us. I wanted to talk about a grant that's coming in, and again, I know this isn't in your particular bailiwick, Councilman Roche, but this is the AM Rotary currently fundraising to replace some playground equipment in Memorial Park. I guess funding for that's starting to come in, and that's really a nice project, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's very nice. It's the playground behind Miller Shelter, which is down off the football fields. The Rotary Group, I believe it was probably about a month ago, they actually did a project down there where they replaced some of the equipment. Their plan all along was to have it more of like a two-phase plan, and then the second phase was where they applied with a grant with the DCNR for $40,000, and that was just awarded. So there is new equipment down there now. It looks beautiful. We thank them very much for that, but they do have some bigger plans for some more equipment down there and some more improvements.
Yeah, well, we were pleased to learn about once Rotarians get onto a project like that. We've seen it happen in the city before.
Yes.
At Rotary Park, and we've seen it at the Institute Hill Playground. They do wonderful things.
Yeah, we're very lucky in Butler with all the civic groups for all they contribute with the budgetary constraints, because if we would just rely on the city, a lot of these projects wouldn't get completed.
Absolutely. And nice to get a $40,000 grant to add to that project. The City of Butler is moving forward with plans to borrow money from Butler County to pay for some projects. And this is something new. Our listeners may not be familiar with that. It's the Butler County Infrastructure Bank that the county commissioners created to help municipalities pay for capital projects. Now, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong here, Councilman, the city can borrow money at an extremely low interest rate and then pay it back to the county?
Yes. So the county takes the loan out. They would then disperse the money to us, and they pay a percentage of the interest rate, and then we would pay the balance. So it's very cheap to borrow money to help create those infrastructure projects that help the community that they need.
And the city has a couple of projects that they're going to use this money for. One of them is the Sullivan Run project.
Yes, Sullivan Run to help with those improvements to deal with the flooding issues we have down the west end of town.
Mm-hmm. Sullivan Run, there was a small stretch of it where the federal government came in, and this is decades ago, and put in some concrete stream banks. That's still looking pretty good. You can see that if you look downstream when you cross the Sullivan Run up in the Penn Street area. But when you get a little bit further downstream toward North Street, Newcastle Street.
There's a lot of tight bends and curves that when there is an extreme amount of water where the buildup happens, then they can cause the flooding when the Sullivan Run goes out of its banks.
And there's vegetation that's grown up there now, small trees and bushes and so on. When times of high water, that gets dragged into the stream, and actually the stream gets high enough that it endangers a couple of those bridges along there in the west end of the city.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them have been replaced. PennDOT replaced the one on, that would be Newcastle Street a couple of years ago. That looks great, but there's two or three other bridges in there that need work, to be replaced. So that some of the money will go for that, and some will go to the streetscape project.
Yes.
That's on Main Street, right?
Main Street, and that's to totally revamp the look of downtown with new lights, new sidewalks, to really make it inviting for people to come into downtown to shop in the 200 block of Main Street.
Mm-hmm. Well, this can make a big difference. Downtown Butler is still pretty attractive when you compare it to a number of other cities of similar size. We were talking about a couple of them. But a project like this can dress it up even more.
Yes.
Witness Slippery Rock. They totally transformed their
Main nice
Street.
Up there?
when I heard about the project, and first time I went up and saw that, that was really, really a superb job.
Mm-hmm.
And Butler's a little bigger project, a little longer section of Main Street than Slippery Rock has, but that'll be nice. The city, I understand, is still going to seek grant money to help fund this streetscape
yes.
project, too.
We've also applied for a grant and hope to take care of
hopefully
most
a very large grant.
Large portion of the
mm-hmm. yeah,
the project.
We have to match it, right? Matching funds.
I'm not totally sure what the percentage is, but
some grants are matching, some
yeah.
are not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It depends on, and of course, just applying for a grant doesn't mean it's going to be awarded either.
That's correct. Yes.
Keep your fingers crossed. Each member of Butler City Council has a liaison with a department that they're particularly responsible for, and then they're able to report back to their fellow members of council. You're a liaison with Public Safety, Councilman Roche, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, I am.
So does that deal with the police and fire, or just police, or what?
Mainly just the fire department. The police department falls under the mayor in a third-class city. But it's been a very busy night for the fire department as well.
Yes.
With all the outages, there's been a ton of lines down, some pole fires, things of that nature.
It's one of those times when you're glad you have a paid professional fire department that's there 24 hours a day because they had a busy night.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We have a new chief now. That's something that's happened since we last chatted.
Yes, hasn't started yet, probably the 1st of December, but I'm definitely looking forward to that. I think we have a great guy in Chris, and he's really going to help advance the fire department especially and improve things all around.
I met Chris Switala. I'm pronouncing his last name
that's
correctly.
That's correct, yes.
Switala. When he came here from Mount Lebanon, I believe,
mm-hmm.
He was named the Butler Township Fire Marshal. In fact, that was early this year. And then he applied for the vacant chief's position. And from what I heard from everybody, great move.
Yes.
Great move. So he takes over officially when?
Probably the 3rd of December.
I see.
He has some obligations with the township he's finishing up this month. So.
Well, that's only a couple of weeks down the road.
Yeah, it won't be long at all.
Yeah. And this is a joint fire chief, something we've never had before.
That's correct. Joint position with the township. So there's a lot of, it's kind of a fluid situation right now. There's a lot of odds and ends we have to work out, but we think we have a roadmap in the right direction that will be great.
Will he be based here in the city, Corey? There's an office for a chief in the public safety building.
Yes, he'll be based out of the public safety building on Washington Street. Primarily, he is our city's chief. We need one regardless.
Mm-hmm.
And then we will be working with the township on their needs, but primarily out of the city.
Township is in a state of flux, too, and I realize that you're an elected representative in the city, not in the township, but they're in the process of further consolidation of their volunteer fire companies, and it looks like it's pretty much a guarantee that they're all going to merge into one fire district now for Butler Township instead of five that
yeah.
they used to have just a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think there's a few logistics they're working through right now, but this should be taking place soon as well.
We still need some state approvals, mm-hmm. but it seems to be more of a rubber stamp at this point. Everyone seems ready to go for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's necessary with volunteer companies. They have fewer and fewer people who are willing to serve and who are able to serve.
Yeah.
Work complications. Many households have everybody and all the adults working, and it's more difficult to be able to respond to a fire.
Yeah, and just volunteerism in general in the fire service is down over the years, so it's a time of need, and they still need to find people, so this is the best mm-hmm. way they can provide that service.
And again, this is not in your particular area, but it looked to me like as I drove through the city early this morning on my way to work, and that was a long time ago, believe me. It's about 5 o'clock this morning. Most of the streets have already been plowed. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. Our streets department does a great job, and with the parks, doing the sidewalks. Both are a lot smaller than you would probably think in terms of manpower.
Mm-hmm.
They do a great job.
Yeah. Well, the problem, I don't think too much was, we did get 3, 4, or 5 inches of very heavy snow, depending on your location. The further north you went, the more there was. And, yeah, that was a problem. But the down trees and branches were the big problem this time around. Mm-hmm. And some plowing had to be put off because the roads were blocked.
Couldn't get through.
Streets were blocked with trees, yeah. Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed. We hope people that are still without power, and there are tens of thousands of them, get back online before too much longer.
Yes, and the city fire station is opening as a warming center.
Thank you.
Today, for any residents that have any need. It's just a temporary solution, so the power is expected to be on tonight. Mm-hmm. So we're not set up to keep anybody overnight, but if you need a place to warm up, something warm to drink, even to charge your phone, since you haven't had power, you can...
Never thought about that.
You can stop down at the fire station and do that.
I was figuring have to do that in your car, you know, go out and start up the car and charge the phone, but you could go to the city fire station, get warm, and charge your phone.
Yeah, and meet some of the guys, the great guys.
Maybe get a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Well, that's good news. I know the last list I saw, there were a number of fire departments around the county that were setting up a couple of municipal buildings, too, but the city fire station is a new one that's been added since I saw the list. Have we covered pretty much everything? Is there anything else happened at council
Dave,
last night? Please, Jimmy. Please,
I got a big item here.
Please, go ahead.
Let me jump in here, Dave. Mayor and council want to invite everybody down to circle your calendar on November 24th for Small Business Saturday. And, of course, that is going to lead in the 53rd annual Spirit of Christmas Parade.
Mm-hmm.
And we're ready for that. And council and mayor want to extend free parking to anybody that wishes to come into the downtown area that day. That's at any metered parking spot, you know, in the parking lots or wherever you can find a metered parking spot. Doesn't include the new parking garage because it's all gated and everything, and you would have to pay to go in there. But they want to extend that courtesy to you. But don't park on Main Street because I've seen them tow cars before before a parade. And
what about the old tier garage?
You can park in there.
That's okay. That's
it's okay in there. There's a lot of spaces in there. That's a good destination. It's undercover. It's well lit. Mm-hmm. You know, we have 275 new LED lights in there. It is brightly lit at night. I don't know if you've noticed it, Dave.
Now, this is it's a week from Saturday. It's not this Saturday, but it's the following one. So all day?
All day.
Free parking?
Free parking, like I say, at a metered space. And, you know, watch the Main Street parking because I believe they cut it off at about 2 o'clock, and we really don't want to see anybody get a ticket or their car towed.
Well, we
work very diligently not to make that happen, but sometimes it does. And I will be participating in my 43rd year as director of bands. And speaking of bands, you know, the Butler Band left for Virginia today, and I've been following them on Facebook, and wow, what an excursion, and they're in bright sunshine right now, last picture I saw, so let's get them home safely, yes.
Yeah. They're going to be playing, I think, tomorrow night in a parade down there.
Yeah, we got to get them back. We need them for the Spirit of Christmas Parade.
Well, they'll be back. Hey, guys, thanks a lot. Not the easiest day to come in here to the station, so we appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having
us. Thanks, Dave.
Parking manager of the city of Butler, Jimmy Ciprian, and one of the members of Butler City Council, Corey Roche, visiting with us here today. We have more to come on It's Your Turn on a Friday. We'll take a break. Stick around. When we come back, we're going to be talking about dog flu. Can Fido get the flu? The answer is yes, and the answer is it can be very, very serious, too, and it's quite contagious. We'll talk with a veterinarian, pretty famous veterinarian, actually, Dr. Courtney Campbell. He's visiting with us by telephone from out in California. You see him on Rachel Ray a lot or live with Kelly and Ryan. He'll be with us coming up next. Couple of minutes here on It's Your Turn on WISR. Be right back.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary, and the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
I was just 49 when I started getting mail from AARP. AARP? Shoot, I was just getting started in life. Then I hit my 60s and retirement was on my mind. The big question was, did I prepare? What about healthcare? Are my finances in order? Not just for my wife and me, but for the kids and grandkids. I got the answers I needed from attorney Michael Pater, specializing in elder law, long-term care, Medicaid, and wills and estate planning, is attorney Michael Pater in the Handicap Accessible Morgan Center. Phone 287-7724.
Going to be talking listeners on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. We're going to be talking about dog flu and other tips to make sure that your pet is healthy as we enter the holiday season. Our guest is Dr. Courtney Campbell, veterinarian at VetSurg. Dr. Campbell, nice to have you with us here today for a few minutes.
Oh, it's great to join you, Dave. Thank you so much for having me. And this is awesome to talk about such an important topic.
Yes, dog flu. I'm sure there are some pet owners who maybe never even heard of dog flu. Tell us about this common disease, Doctor.
Well, this is part of the reason why I was really looking forward to speaking with you this morning, because I wanted to do two things. Number one, I wanted to talk about the dog flu and bring awareness to it, and sort of the awareness campaign that dog flu is a virus. Canine influenza is a real virus out there. It is contagious, and it can spread really rapidly. And the dogs who are at the highest risk are dogs who are social, the so-called life-of-the-party dogs who are always going up to other dogs and interacting with them, rubbing noses and that sort of thing. And during this holiday season, that's really important. The second thing I want to talk about is the good news, that there's a way to prevent it, and that's through vaccines and just basically making sure that your dog gets a flu shot.
Can you tell us about the symptoms of dog flu? Are they similar to what we would see in humans?
Yeah, the good parallel. And I like the way you put that, because a lot of people have had the flu before, and it puts them on the couch for a week. They don't feel like going to work. In fact, they probably shouldn't go to work, and they feel real bad. They may cough, they may sneeze, and they just don't want to move. Well, dogs actually feel very similar. Now, to be sure, you can't get dog flu from your dog. There's been no reported cases of a human contracting dog flu, but the symptoms and the clinical signs, they have really strong parallels in that dogs may not want to move. They'll look lethargic. They don't want to eat. They'll have maybe crusting eyes, a runny nose, a cough. And all of those signs should alert pet parents to say, whoa, does my dog have the dog flu? And you know, is this warrant a veterinary visit? Because a lot of things can look similar to dog flu, but it could also be something completely different. If you see those signs, if your dog looks sick and acts like he has a cold, then that's a dog that needs to see a veterinarian.
A little bit more about our guest, listeners. Does that name sound familiar? Dr. Courtney Campbell, maybe the voice does. That's because you may have seen him. He's been a frequent guest on TV programs such as Rachel Ray and Live with Kelly and Ryan. He also co-hosted a national talk show on National Geo Wild called Pet Talk. And as I mentioned earlier, he's currently at VetSurg, which is a specialty surgery practice for animals in Ventura, California. You mentioned that there's no recorded case of humans catching dog flu from their pet. What about the other way around? Can dogs get sick from us, Doctor?
That's great. That's a great question, too. And when you think about it, it's like, you know, dog bites man. When does man bite dog, right? And that's always an interesting topic. I think most people are concerned with this because they know that the flu virus is mutable. It can change. It can always adjust. And so they've heard about species jumping before in various other strains of the flu. But one thing that we can be sure about, and kind of all pet parents can breathe a sigh of relief, there hasn't been any cases of dog to man or man to dog transmission when it comes to the flu virus.
You mentioned holiday time. Most folks get a lot of visitors at holiday time. Dogs will be around other dogs perhaps, but I'm thinking of things like if people go away for the holidays, they may put Fido in a kennel, or if you know, you're taking your pet with you at the airport, these would be danger zones, I guess, for our pets, right?
Yes, you hit the nail right on the head. It's the most wonderful time of the year, you know, for pet parents, for people, for anybody who's social, and we recognize that. And that's why it's so important to talk about, because it is a wonderful time. But it's also a dangerous time, because there are infectious organisms, things we can't see, viruses, bacteria, that are constantly assaulting our bodies that our immune systems have to fight off. And that means that dog flu is at the top of the list when it comes to considering what kinds of things could affect my dog's lungs, what kinds of things could make my pet sick. And so when you think about places that are at the highest risk, you want to think about places where there's a lot of social dogs, boarded kenneling facilities, grooming facilities. You did mention airports. Anytime you're walking into a house where there's going to be other dogs, and those are dogs I consider to be at the highest risk. Medium risk, maybe a dog who's at home all by himself. And some pet parents will say, well, I don't get it. Why would my dog even be at risk if they're all by themselves? And that's because the flu virus can live outside of the body. It can live on the hands. It can live on collars, leashes, dog beds, and just objects. And so it's really important to clean, disinfect those objects, because even if your dog's all alone, they can spread the flu. They can contract the flu virus, and it's important for them to be vaccinated as well. The last group that I'd like to talk about are dogs who I consider on the brink. These are the young, the old, dogs who have heart disease maybe or another illness. These are dogs who, although they tend to be a little bit more isolated, it would be disastrous if they caught the flu virus. So these dogs who are, quote, on the brink, definitely need to be vaccinated as well so that they can always stay protected.
Can I ask you a quick question at the holiday time about what, other than dog flu, might be dangerous to pets? What about eating chocolate? There's a lot of that around over the holidays. Or poinsettias. Are they poisonous to pets?
Well, it's dangerous for me to eat chocolate because once I start, I can't stop. So it's definitely one of those things that I always think about. But of course, there's poinsettias that have been shown to be toxic. Chocolate, I think a lot of pet parents are familiar with, that can be toxic. So, certain things that pet parents aren't aware of, like more odd things, would be dough, bread dough. That's a situation where the bread dough can sit in the stomach, and the heat causes the dough to rise, and it actually produces alcohol. So your pet can essentially get drunk off of bread dough. Nutmeg is also another potential toxin. And around this time of year, who doesn't have nutmeg in their house? So there are a lot of little hazards that you just wouldn't think about. But I say at the top of the list, right alongside dog flu, would be people food. And that's where people say, oh, I'll just give them a little bit of cheese, a little bit of salami, maybe a little bit of food off of the table. And although it's delicious, the next day your pet is really ill. So you don't want to turn Thanksgiving into a time where your pet's saying to you, well, thanks for giving me this illness, or thanks for giving me this stomach upset. You want them to be happy, healthy, and safe.
Our time is gone, Dr. Courtney Campbell. Is there anywhere else where listeners can learn more about dog flu and how to avoid it over the holidays?
Oh, there's a really rich resource online, and that's why I'm so happy that I've joined with my friends at Merck Animal Health to really talk about this website, dogflu.com. And anybody who's listening, any pet parent, even if you don't have a pet, jump on dogflu.com because it's a great interactive resource where pet parents can jump on and see great things. Like, I have written a book with Dr. Catherine Krim called Pet Parents Guide to Infectious Disease. That's a really good read. And then also had the pleasure of hosting a podcast called The Dr. Courtney Show, where we talk specifically about the granular details of dog flu. But above anything else, you can simply type in a search to find where there's veterinarians in your area that have vaccines that can help to protect your pet.
Dr. Courtney Campbell. Doctor, thanks very much. Good things to talk about today. Good to have you with us.
Awesome talking with you. Thanks so much.
Sure.
I really appreciate it.
Sure. So long now.
Dr. Andrew Szabo of Butler Health System with the story of a remarkable recovery.
Joe's never the kind to be still for long. A hernia can stop that in a hurry. The technology we use makes surgery less invasive, and that makes recovery less challenging. That's a big investment for a community hospital. But then again, we're not the average community hospital.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care. But more importantly, we know why we have to.
When the time comes, the last thing you need to concern yourself with is planning the funeral. It's the wrong time, your time of grieving, when your emotions come to the surface. You just can't think straight. You just can't. Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler suggests that you pre-plan the funeral. Make all of the choices now while you're still emotionally able to. The funeral service, the casket, which minister, priest, or rabbi, cremation, visitations, flowers, church services or not. All of these decisions. Avoid all of that. Pre-plan now. Make those decisions now while you can think clearly and rationally. Think about it, and then talk it over with us at Thompson Miller. Call 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or www.thompson-miller.com. Pre-arrangement. It really makes sense. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller. Time-honored excellence.
On the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, first of all, welcome. My name is Dave Malarkey. We're going to be talking about getting a healthy brain. Our guest joins us by telephone. It is Dr. Daniel Amen, physician, a double board certified psychiatrist and the founder of Amen Clinics. Doctor, nice to have you with us here today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
We want to talk about your new book. It's called Feel Better Fast and Make It Last. And we're talking about having a healthy brain to help us overcome emotional difficulties, right?
Well, it's more than that, although that's certainly part of it. I wrote this book because we live in an instant gratification society. And then I realized everybody who's come to see me over the last 40 years, they want to feel better fast. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to drag it out. And so what are the things you can do? And too often people do things that help themselves feel better now, but not later, versus what I try to teach my patients, you know, how can you feel better now and later? And I created a mnemonic for the book called Brain Excel. It's exactly what I work on with my patients over the last 40 years. And the B is you got to get your brain right. So just as you said, if your brain's not right, you're never going to be right. Mm-hmm. And so I teach people how to do that. But the R is you got to get your rational mind right. Too often people live with undisciplined minds. And I teach them how to kill the ants, the automatic negative thoughts that steal their happiness. So you can direct your mind to feel happy or you can direct it to feel terrible. As you know, we're having the fires here in California, and one of my patients actually lost her house in the fire. It was just devastating. And she called me up, and she said, I need medication. And I'm like, I'm good with medication. I can do that. But let me talk you through what's going on in your head. And at the end of a half an hour, she didn't need medication. She needed to solve problems and direct her mind toward the gratitude she had that the people in her life was safe.
Mm-hmm. Now, you point out in your book, Dr. Amen, that it's perfectly normal to experience challenging emotions. I mean, we all do that in a course of life. But you say the most important thing is how people respond to these challenges, right?
Right. And the A in Brain Excel is attachments. It's our relationships. And I teach people the most important part is responsibility, which does not mean it's your fault. It's your ability to respond to what is going on and act in a way that is consistent with your goals.
We're talking with Dr. Daniel Amen, MD, about Feel Better Fast and Make It Last. Now, some people will try to face these challenging emotions with temporary easements, Dr. Amen. Sometimes it could be medication, as you just mentioned a moment or so ago. Sometimes people eat too much, go to drugs, alcohol, or risky sexual behavior, even spending too much time before the TV or video games. These may give temporary relief, but they're not going to last, right?
That's right. In fact, they can actually make you worse in the long run because what you allow your brain to do, it's going to want to do again. And that's how food addictions, drug addictions, video game addictions start. And I try to get people to be very purposeful. You know, more people, they spend more time planning for Christmas or vacation than they actually do their life. So there's an exercise I love called the one-page miracle, which is on one piece of paper, I want you to write down what you want: relationships, work, money, physical, emotional, spiritual health. And then I want you to go, is my behavior getting me what I want? So it's not about what you should or shouldn't do. It's, well, does it fit? So, for example, I always want a kind, caring, loving, supportive, passionate relationship with my wife. But I don't always feel like that. I always want it, but I always don't feel like it. So can I act in a way that gets me what I want? Or do I let the whims of the moment cause me to say something hurtful to her? And when I'm purposeful, my life is better.
Dr. Amen has created a mnemonic to help folks get a healthier brain. The mnemonic is BrainXL, BrainXL. We went partially through that mnemonic, Dr. Amen. Can we pick it up and mention the other parts of it? I think we did BRA. Is that correct?
Right. And I stands for inspiration. And this is about passion and purpose. And I talk about the pleasure centers in the brain and how they can be hijacked by troubled behavior that we talked about. You know, well, where does cocaine work in the brain, or where does new love work in the brain? And I talk about how to keep your pleasure centers healthy, and you do it by avoiding things that turn them on too much, like cocaine, and do things so it's like dumping dopamine. Dopamine's that pleasure chemical that turns on your pleasure centers. Mm-hmm. So rather than dumping it with cocaine or scary movies, I want you to drip it. And that's that. If you have passion and purpose in your life, it keeps them healthy. Did you know that people who are obese, that their pleasure centers are actually dull? And so it's like they need more and more low quality but very delicious food in order just to feel normal. So it's the whole science of addiction. The N is nutrition. And that's both food and supplements that can help nourish your brain. Brand new study from Australia showed that if you increase the number of fruits and vegetables, colorful fruits and vegetables, and decrease processed foods, they found it to actually treat depression. So it worked as well as antidepressant medication. So food is medicine, or it's poison. The X is really interesting because it's all the lessons I've learned from the brain imaging work we do. So I call it the X factor. We've scanned over 150,000 brains. And the big lesson is you're not stuck with the brain you have. You can make it better by putting these strategies into your life. And the L is love. You do the right thing not because you should do it, but because you love yourself, you love your wife, you love your mission, you love your life. So it's really getting your mindset right. Too often people say, well, I love beer, or I love pasta, or I love brownies. And it's like, why are those substances in the same part of your head as your grandchildren? And so I really help people take a more thoughtful approach to why they do the right things for their health. It's never because you should, because shoulds just don't work. You have to do it because of love.
Missing love or loss of love can also create emotional challenges, and that's something to be considered. And you talk about that in your book, Doctor.
Well, you know, I really wanted to go after the things that make people feel bad and help them feel better fast. So there's a whole section on trauma. You know, obviously, as we're experiencing here in California. And there's a whole section on grief when you get disconnected. And too often, people do the wrong things that prolong their grief states rather than do things that actually help heal their brain so they can heal from the relational hurts that happen to all of us.
Dr. Amen, listeners, is the lead researcher on the world's largest brain imaging and rehabilitation study of professional football players. This has been very much in the news across the country in recent years. In fact, there was a movie called Concussion featuring Will Smith, and you were like a consultant or something, doctor, on that flick?
Yeah, the writer and director actually followed a number of my patients, and I was actually written into the script as the hope, and then I have the unhappiness of being written out of the script. But I was really pleased. But, you know, what people don't know, everybody knows now. So when I started my study in 2008, a lot of people didn't know that playing football causes long-term damage, even for high school players, which horrified me because I played in high school. But what people don't know is even if you've been bad to your brain, you've hit it thousands of times, as these football players do, that you can rehabilitate it if you put the brain in a healing environment. And that's what we showed in our NFL work, which made us so happy. And it goes with, you know, the theme of our work. You are not stuck with the brain you have. You can make it better. You just need the right plan to do it.
Is your book accessible for the average person, doctor? You don't have to be a pre-med student or anything to figure out what you're talking about?
No, it's actually written at a seventh grade level. So I try to make things as easy as possible because I want everybody to benefit from it. Plus, I think the smarter you are, the simpler you can say things.
It's the latest book in a series of them. Dr. Amen has written a lot of books in the past, but his newest one is called Feel Better Fast and Make It Last by Dr. Daniel G. Amen, M.D. Doctor, good to talk with you today. Thanks for spending some time with us, sir.
Thank you so much, Dave.
Sure. So long now.
Take care.
One of our sponsors on the It's Your Turn program today is Miller Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. A family tradition for, over 125 years now. Miller Shoes, headquarters, and boy, you need this all of a sudden with winter weather arriving early this year. Headquarters for boots and for overshoes. You'll find Timberland shoes and boots at Miller's Shoes, quality shoe brand at Timberland. And you'll find overshoes, boots, waterproof boots, overshoes to protect your dress shoes. They've got them. Also, your headquarters for athletic shoes for the whole family, adults, teens, kids. And Miller's has all your famous brands, too. Nike, New Balance, Saucony, Rockport, Keds, Easy Spirit, Pro-Pet, and more. And they're all there under one roof. Don't have to go to three or four different stores. Miller Shoes also carries famous name brands like Hush Puppies, like Rockport, SAS Comfort Shoes for men and women. Made in the USA, by the way. Not too many shoes that you can say that about anymore. And you'll always find hundreds of pairs of men's and women's shoes, sale priced and on racks for easy browsing when you stop in. Oh, and where do you find slippers these days? Well, you find slippers at Miller's Shoes. That's where. Men's and women's slippers, Daniel Green, Foam Treads, Lamo, other brands too. And a wonderful Christmas gift, by the way, for someone on your list. A new pair of slippers. Miller's Shoes, they have literally served generations. Folks from our area, been there for over 125 years. 215 South Main Street, downtown Butler, Miller's Shoes. Another one of our sponsors, Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, south of Butler, about 5 miles south of the city at the intersection with Thorncrest Drive. Suburban Animal Clinic. It's an animal veterinary practice where the professional and courteous staff strive to provide the very best possible veterinary care for your pets so that you can enjoy many, many years of companionship together. They offer a variety of services, obviously wellness and regular checkups, medical and surgical procedures for your dog or cat or other animal. They offer dental care for pets, laser therapy, even prescription diets. You know, that's one problem that many of us have with our pets. They get overweight, and that's dangerous. That can lead to other serious health problems. What about microchipping? they do that as well at Suburban Animal Clinic. And, of course, emergency care for your dog or cat or pet as well. Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, just south of Butler. It's about 5 miles south of Butler at the intersection with Thorncrest Drive. If you're driving south from Butler on Route 8 toward Pittsburgh, as soon as you pass all the auto dealerships, start looking on the left-hand side. You'll see Suburban Animal Clinic. They are open Mondays from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m., Tuesdays 9 to 6, Wednesdays 9 to 8, Thursdays 9 to 7, Fridays 9 to 3:30, and Saturdays from 9 to noon. Suburban Animal Clinic, for your pet and for your peace of mind. Coming up next on the It's Your Turn program, we're going to talk about how to feel better fast by getting your brain in shape. We'll be chatting with Dr. Daniel Amen. Actually, we just chatted with Daniel Amen, didn't we? Been a long day here at the plant, folks. We'll be talking about the Infernal Library coming up next with Daniel Calder. We'll be right back.
Whether you're a competitive athlete or a weekend warrior, any injury that keeps you on the sidelines should be treated by a sports medicine expert. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers offers sports medicine specialists right here in Butler to get you back to enjoying the activities you love. Doctors Rob Waltrip, Josh Szabo, and John Richmond have trained with some of the biggest names in orthopedic sports medicine and use their expertise to treat you. Tri-Rivers accepts most major insurance plans, including both Highmark and UPMC. Learn more at TriRiversMSK.com. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, partnering with the Butler community for more than 20 years.
We have a most fascinating book, listeners, to discuss on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. The author of that book, Daniel Calder, joins us by telephone. The title is The Infernal Library, on dictators, the books they wrote, and other catastrophes of literacy. Daniel Calder, nice to meet you. Terrific to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Thank you for having me.
Your title is intriguing beyond belief. As soon as I saw it, I was talking with your publicist. I knew that I wanted to chat with you. So what's this all about? You've examined dictators over the past 100 years or so, and then the writings that they left?
Pretty much. So a few years ago, I discovered that Saddam Hussein had written a novel, and I thought this was, so I got a copy and I read it, and it was a romance novel, and it was fairly terrible, but it wasn't an ordinary romance novel, as you might expect. I had kind of mixed in politics with kind of like scenes of rape and other terrible things, and it was just really, really bizarre. And then this kind of made me think about all these other dictator books I'd heard of, like, you know, Chairman Mao wrote the Little Red Book and Gaddafi wrote the Green Book, and I started digging into it, and I discovered that basically over the course of the last century and even into this century, a great number of dictators had written not just one book but many, many books, and that there was almost a tradition of dictators all the way from Lenin through Stalin, Hitler, Mussolini, Mao, and then, you know, some of the smaller dictators. They were all like prodigious producers of terrible prose.
And these were books of all different genres. You know, many people might be familiar with a book or two, a title or two from Adolf Hitler, but these guys wrote romance novels, fiction, even poetry sometimes?
Yeah, quite a few of them were poets. And I think that's what really interested me when I started looking into it. I thought, okay, I lived in Russia for about 10 years, and I was familiar with these shelves just lined with the works of Lenin, which are, you know, very political writings. But, you know, like I said, Saddam Hussein did this romance novel. Mussolini, he was actually a journalist for a good 20 years before he was dictator, and so he tried his hand at almost everything, from biography to memoir to novels. And then poetry, a lot of them wrote poetry. So Chairman Mao wrote poetry through his entire career. Ho Chi Minh wrote poetry. Stalin, when he was a teenager, wrote poetry that was actually, it was quite successful. It got published in prestigious journals. Huh. And, you know, and so maybe he wasn't even a bad poet. Maybe he should have, you know, considered that as a career instead.
Who knew? And the reason why nobody knows is because From what I read in your book, Daniel, most of these works are entirely unread today.
Yeah, that's one of the other things that really interested me is, you know, these books were almost, they were sacred texts in the regimes. So when these dictators came into power, these books, some of which they'd written, you know, years earlier, would be forced on the masses, and they had to study them, and they were at the center of these personality cults. And so they would have, like, print runs in the millions, or in Chairman Mao's case, even over a billion for the Little Red Book. And people were, they were everywhere. And yet, it's almost the minute, like, these regimes disappear or collapse, the books vanish. And they literally vanish, you know. You get to, I guess the trauma of reading them is such that they just, nobody wants to do it anymore, which is understandable. But I remember when I lived in Russia, it was actually, you know, quite hard to find some of these books. It's hard to find the original books by Stalin. When I was doing research, I have quite a few friends in Poland, and they'd grown up under these kind of regimes. And I asked them, like, did they remember, you know, what books had they been forced to read? But even their memories, they'd sort of erased the experience. I mean, I guess they'd been sort of reading them, but not really reading them. You know, they knew they had to do it. And then the minute that kind of obligation was lifted, they just kind of disappeared and faded into the sands. The sands of time.
You were in Russia. Did you live in Moscow for a while?
Yeah, I did. I lived there for nearly 10 years.
Wow.
Pretty much. And it was an interesting time because I was there. Arrived in the mid-90s when Boris Yeltsin was the president, and it was this kind of chaotic bandit capitalism. And then I left about 2000 and end of 2005, start of 2006, when Putin was kind of strengthening his hold. So it was a transitional period.
You must be
of great historical interest.
Must be interested in the headlines these days about possible Russian interference in the U.S. election in 2016, and also very recently in the news, the possibility perhaps that Russians were involved in poisoning a former spy in Great Britain. I'm sure you've heard about that story.
Yeah, I mean, that reminds me of there was another story in, I think, 2006. There was Litvinenko. Was kind of poisoned, and in a very unsubtle way. So this kind of stuff is deeply alarming, and I think, you know, some of the interference is actually, it seems new because it's appearing on social media, which is a kind of semi-new technology, but I think these kind of campaigns of disinformation are very old. I think they've been going on for decades. But, I mean, the stuff in the UK is very, very alarming, you know, there's no doubt about it.
Did you ever feel threatened or alarmed or even frightened sometimes when you were living in Moscow?
I wasn't a very important person, you know. So I remember somebody gave me some advice. They said, "As long as you don't, it was like if you invested in, you know, money or real estate, these big money areas, then you made yourself a target. But as long as you just, as long as you just kind of kept your head down." You were fine, and you know, I'm not a billionaire investor, so I was never going to get on the radar of any of these kind of dangerous people.
A little bit more about our guest, listeners, and then we'll talk more about his fascinating book, The Infernal Library. Daniel Calder, with whom we're chatting on the phone here, as he just said, lived in Russia, in Moscow for 10 years. He currently lives in Texas, believe it or not, but he's originally from Scotland, from Fife. That's up around St. Andrews, isn't it, Daniel?
That's correct. St. Andrews is in Fife, so I'm home of golf, no less. So
yes,
I'm from the kind of other side. I mean, Fife is very small. I'm from the town called Dunfermline, which was the ancient capital of Scotland. So kings are buried there. And Andrew Carnegie, the steel magnate, was born there. But yeah, I mean, it was historically significant at one point, but it's quite a small town now. You know?
Here in western Pennsylvania, we know that name, Andrew Carnegie, because he eventually ended up in Pittsburgh, of course. But yes, he was from Scotland.
Yeah. I think the very first Carnegie Library was in my town. Because he never, you know, when we grew up, we had a big monument to Carnegie in Dunfermline, and every kind of park and library or swimming pool has his name on it, so he was a kind of benefactor. So So they used to take us down to respect, to pay homage to his monument when we were children. So he was a big deal.
You have a pretty scary bridge up there, if I remember. Is it the Firth of Forth? Is there this gargantuan bridge that goes over the Firth of Forth up there, Daniel?
That's right. It sounds like you've been there.
I have been, yes. I've been to the shrine, the shrine of St. Andrews. I had the friends I was with take about 5,000 pictures of me in front of the clubhouse at St. Andrews, just in case one of them would come out. listeners, we're talking with Daniel Calder about his book, The Infernal Library, on dictators, the books they wrote, and other catastrophes of literature. So once you've found some of these books, and you, as you indicated a few minutes ago, it's very difficult to even find them. When you read them, I mean, it must have been boring if most of them were pretty bad, right?
It was excruciatingly boring, is the best way to put it. And I should say, you know, the book, if you look at when I published my second book, Strange Telescopes, it was 2008 when I published it in the UK, 2009 in the US, and now we're in 2018. And one of the reasons is it took a long time to read through all these books, to find them all. There was a lot of them. And then, you know, they're so awful that you have to kind of pace yourself. So you can't just sit down and read book after book after book by Lenin or Stalin. I mean, so you read it, and then you go do something else. And then, and on top of that, there was a lot of contextual reading I had to do as well, because some of the dictators I look at are quite obscure. I became very obsessed with this Mongolian dictator, Choibalsan, and he was kind of like a miniature Stalin in Mongolia, and he had his own personality cult and the kind of his own mausoleum, and kind of digging down his stuff was difficult. But I mean, that was kind of interesting. It was a kind of form of archaeology almost. I was kind of digging deeper and deeper to dig up worse and worse kind of literary atrocities, and then every now and then you'd find something that was sort of almost good, like I think Mussolini's War Diary. That really surprised me. That was quite readable. And then he did some plays. He did a play about Napoleon, and I mean, that was a hard one to track down.
Now, did you have to visit these countries, Daniel, or were you able to find some of this stuff online these days? Or it must have taken you a long time to do this research.
Yeah, some of them, well, because I lived in Russia for so long, and I was traveling in Central Asia. So, like, at the end of the book, I described this place, Turkmenistan, which had a really extreme dictatorship in the 1990s and 2000s. And I spent a month there, kind of experiencing and they had a book, so I experienced that kind of, like, really in close quarters. And then I've been to other places, but some of it, it's surprising. I mean, through the wonders of the internet, for good or for ill, you know, you can find this stuff if you dig deep enough. And I mean, in Texas, I live just outside Austin, and they have a very, very big research library at UT Austin. And I was amazed at what I could find at the University of Texas's research library. I mean, really obscure works by Chairman Mao, or even, like, even more obscure Mongolian dictators. So I think, you know, if you're at some point, you know, in the 20th century, people were studying this stuff. And so sometimes you can find the books buried in the dark corners of a library. And that was actually fun. I remember getting a book by this Bulgarian dictator out of UT library. And I think I was the first person to check it out in like 30 or 40 years. Just being like sitting there. And that was quite a thrill. I mean, maybe a thrill. It was just really interesting to have that sense of discovery. Yeah. You know, even if you're discovering something fairly awful, but it was just like, yeah, no one's even looked at this in so long because they've been forgotten. Yeah.
We'll take a quick break, folks. Fortunately, we have a few more minutes that we're able to speak with our guest, author Daniel Calder. We'll pick up our conversation with him here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words.
Dr. William Saar of Butler Health System, with the story of a remarkable recovery.
Come fall, Dale's mind wanders toward the woods. I want the rest of him to follow, but his ankle wouldn't allow it. With the latest technology and our talented caring team, we were able to get him back out there. It's about improving the quality of people's lives every day, and Dale is proof.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care, but more importantly, We know why we have to.
It's the holiday season, and you're buying gifts for everyone, but not everyone lives around here anymore. So you've got to ship those gifts, and you want a local, reliable shipping company that you can trust to get that package to your loved ones. We suggest Going Postal in Butler. Going Postal, just off Newcastle Road. They'll find a way to ship just about anything. Simple, too. Just take the gift up. They pack it. They ship it. And if you want to get stocking stuffers like lottery tickets or Christmas cards, they've got those, too. They're just off Newcastle Road, right in between Villa Grande and King's Restaurant. Going Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping store.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 7979. The pick 3 is 960-960. The pick 4, 7658. The pick 5, 78798. Wild ball for each of those is 9. The treasure hunt is 1, 5, 17, 26, and 28. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $101,000.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Welcome back. If you're joining us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, no problem. My name is Dave Malarkey. We're chatting pleasantly with author Daniel Calder, who visits with us on the telephone. Daniel is a journalist. He has contributed to The Guardian. You might expect that, originally from Scotland. Also contributed to Esquire magazine, the Dallas Morning News, many other publications. He lives in Texas now. And his latest book is called The Infernal Library, on dictators, the books they wrote, and other catastrophes of literacy. Let's talk about Hitler a little bit, because I didn't realize he'd written a bunch of other stuff. Probably his most famous work was Mein Kampf. Am I remembering the title of that correctly, Daniel?
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, Mein Kampf was his magnum opus, I suppose. And one of the interesting things, Mein Kampf has obviously a terrible reputation, and one of the things that struck me about that was it's kind of everything you expect it to be. So my whole life, I knew about this book, but I never read it, and then when I picked it up, it was as kind of venomous and frothing at the mouth as you'd expect. Mm. Just page after page of it was just bilious hatred. But that book almost existed by accident. And I don't think he was in prison when he wrote it, and he kind of dictated it, and so it has this very loose form. And I think if he hadn't been in prison, he might not have done it. And later he admitted, or he said to one of his associates, that he kind of regretted writing it once he was the Chancellor. And then he even said I am not a writer, were his words. So, I mean, Hitler, I mean, if he was at least aware that that was probably not a great book, Yeah, that didn't prevent the regime from forcing it on people. I mean, they had a special wedding edition of Mein Kampf, which they handed out to couples. It was translated. It was rendered in Braille, so blind people could read it.
Wow, never knew that.
And I think Mein Kampf 2 is one of the few dictator books that it still has a kind of afterlife. So I mean, that you can find that online. Easily,
yeah.
And there's still kind of fanatics who kind of like it.
There's a picture in your book that I've never seen before of Hitler in short pants and lederhosen. It's kind of arresting when you see that.
Yeah, that picture is kind of is wild. And the reason I put it in there is because there's actually fashion advice in Mein Kampf. And I think it's the sort of the stupendous arrogance of a lot of these dictators is they're experts on everything and they have an opinion on everything. And so you can be reading Mein Kampf and there'll be some just anti-Semitic kind of atrocity going on the page. And then, but Hitler can't really maintain his train of thought very well, so suddenly he'll segue into something else, and there's like a long rant in the book about how he just really hates stovepipe trousers, and how it's outrageous, the fashions of youth today, and then he gives some advice for what they should be wearing. You know, so there's so that's why I saw that picture of him wearing his lederhosen, and I thought, I guess this is what he thought everybody should have on.
So what about the relevance of your research into these bad guys today? First of all, do you see any parallels? Here we are almost 20 years now into the 21st century. Anything that mirrors anything like you saw from these books, any of them almost a century ago?
I think maybe two things are, when I read it, I found it actually quite alarming because a lot of these books, so these guys, they were really obscure figures, Lenin or, you know, Hitler, and they were writing away in a corner. And even Mussolini was a famous editor, but he didn't have any political following. So they've been, you know, just cranking this stuff out for years and years and years. And then about 100 years ago, there was this just sort of, there was the war, but surrounding the war, there was this kind of just collapse in confidence, kind of like these systems which had been in existence for a very, very long time, these empires, suddenly they just, people didn't believe in them anymore, you know? And I felt like there was this instability and loss of belief and faith and confidence. And I think into this kind of vortex in the right conditions, that's where, like, you know, these kind of radical guys can thrive. And mm-hmm. So I don't think we're at that point yet, you know, but I do think, you know, after the Cold War, you know, there was this like feeling of optimism, it was the end of history, we were all going to be okay. But now I think there's this sort of sense of shifting and changing. You know, you have these like populist elections in Europe and things going on here, and I think nobody quite knows where we're going or where we are right now. And so it's not as extreme as it was a century ago, so I'm not going to be alarmist, but I felt, you know, things can change very quickly. And then more than that, I think if you look around the world right now, I mean, there's actually, when I started writing this, Gaddafi was still alive, Castro was still alive, Islam Karimov in Uzbekistan was still alive, and I almost felt I was writing kind of a footnote to the 20th century, that I was just tying up some loose ends, you know? Mm. And then there's the Arab Spring, and there was this kind of brief moment of optimism. But now we find there's a kind of new dictatorships emerging. And so, you know, Putin has really strengthened his position in Russia, and he issued a book a few years ago. You know, in Turkey we see Erdogan, a highly authoritarian leader. And then in China, and this is what really caught me off guard, was I think the day before this book was published, in China they had a big Communist Party Congress, and they're removing the term limits for Xi Jinping, so he can now become leader for life. And the minute I kind of learned that, I was Googling about, and I discovered that Xi Jinping has about 4 or 5 books to his name. And these are already being praised as kind of works of genius, and they're million sellers. And I managed to get a copy of one of his books. And it begins with him praising Chairman Mao, you know, very early on. And so he's drawing a line of continuity. And Xi Jinping was like a young man during the Cultural Revolution, so he saw the Little Red Book and all that craziness. And I thought, you know, well, wow, like, you know, like decades later, that wasn't a reason not to do it, you know, or it didn't like make you go, oh, I better like stay away from that. So again, it's not as extreme, but it's kind of coming back. So, you know, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes, as they say. And I think that's something I had in mind a lot when I was doing this book.
It's an interesting analogy. Listeners, did you know? I mean, probably knew that Hitler had written Mein Kampf, but Stalin and Mussolini writing poetry. Chairman Mao, yeah, I was familiar with him. I didn't know that Ho Chi Minh had been a writer. It's an interesting parallel that so many of these dictators actually began their careers as writers. And, of course, Stalin, Mussolini, and Hitler, as our guest Daniel Calder just mentioned, they all were nobodies at the end of World War I 100 years ago, but then they rose to power in that period between the two world wars. So you got all finished with this. What was absolutely the worst book you read after all of your research, Daniel Calder? The worst one?
Oh, that's, it's so hard to choose. Mein Kampf is terrible. Chairman Mao's philosophy is awful. But maybe just the most incompetent and just for sheer drivel is probably Gaddafi. He wrote this thing called the Green Book, and you can see even the title was a response to Mao's Red Book, so he was making his play for leadership of the global revolution. But it has just some barking mad stuff in it, and it's totally incoherent. And you really get, if you ever saw him, a few years ago, Gaddafi did that speech at the UN, and he rambled on for hours without any editing. And it's like that. It's just a guy. There was no restraints, no constraints. I don't think he'd ever read a book. So he thought all of his thoughts were fascinating. And, he just goes on and on and on. And then I think it just kind of ends with him saying he doesn't like boxing very much. And so it's totally arbitrary. It's like, here's how we organize society. And by the way, I don't like boxing very much. So that was probably the worst.
One point, and we have to wrap up here. Our time is getting short, but most of these guys didn't realize that what they thought were radical thoughts were really nothing new. They had appeared previously and political experiments, part of regimes that had already failed badly. So they were a little bit, they overestimated, I guess, their own self-importance or the self-importance of their writings, eh?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a recurring theme across all of these guys, is kind of monstrous arrogance and total conviction that they have the answers, to history, to politics, to everything. And, when you read them, it's like, actually, like banal or just false or obviously absurd. But that didn't stop them, and so so they kept going. So I think that kind of, and I think that's maybe what divides them from normal authors who may also be quite egotistical, or even politicians. I think every politician needs a healthy dose of arrogance, but these guys took it to a cosmic level, and then it spread to their belief, not only in their own abilities, but in the genius of their writings. So, in their eyes, at least, everything they touched turned to gold, but in reality, it was the opposite.
Daniel Calder has written some other books, folks. He comes up with these great, intriguing titles. His latest, The Infernal Library. Two of your earlier books were titled Lost Cosmonaut and Strange Telescopes. They make me want to read them, Daniel, just by the title. Are they still in print, by the way?
I think definitely you can get them, as e-books. I mean, they're easy to find. So all the books are online. You can find them on Amazon, all the usual places.
If you're looking for Daniel Calder online, folks, his last name is spelled K-A-L-D-E-R. Daniel Calder, author of The Infernal Library, has been our guest for the last few minutes here on It's Your Turn. Daniel, nice to meet you. Terrific to talk with you. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Dave. It was my pleasure.
Okay. So long now.
Bye.
It's back. The popular Purses for a Purpose fundraiser is back and just in time for the holidays. You and your friends are cordially invited on Sunday, December 2nd from noon to 3 at the Vagabond Center. This holiday Purses for a Purpose is hosted by the YWCA and will feature over $10,000 worth of designer purses from names like Coors, Coach, Versace, Furla, Kate Spade, and more. But with a holiday twist, there'll be games, the 100 Purse Basket Raffle, and more. Tickets are just $30 and include hors d'oeuvres and sweets. So celebrate the holidays with your friends at the Holiday Purses for a Purpose, December 2nd. Tickets are on sale now at the YWCA at 120 West Cunningham Street or at the Butler Radio Network offices at 252 Pillow Street in Butler.
It's never been more important to stay in touch with the events and issues that shape our world. And for more than 25 years, Radio Pennsylvania has been the Commonwealth's source for stories and newsmakers impacting your life.
We're taking precautions to prepare for the worst that this storm can deliver.
And I believe that we need an armed, highly trained security officer in every school.
We should not be using mental illness as a scapegoat for things like mass shootings and violence.
Covering your state capital and all corners of the Commonwealth, Radio PA's team of award-winning journalists is on constant watch as your eyes and ears on the front lines of the major events of our time. Honored for broadcasting and journalistic excellence by
the Associated Press, the Pennsylvania Association of Broadcasters, the National Association of State Radio Networks, the National Headliner Awards, and many others.
Eight-time winner of the Joe Snyder Award for Outstanding News Service, the top news honor bestowed by the Associated Press in Pennsylvania. The Radio Pennsylvania Network, bringing you closer to Harrisburg and all of your Keystone State.
This is Butler's hometown radio station, your source for the latest local news, sports, and community activities. Only on WISR, 680 AM Butler.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by TerraWorks Relief.
I'm Jim Shenevy. President Trump says he has answered written questions from Russia's special counsel Robert Mueller.